It's time now for Radio Naturopath. Welcome. This is the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right. So this morning, I was watching the Today Show, like I often do, and Maria Shriver was on, and she was talking about something that intrigued me, so I wanted to look into it. And that's that there is now a blood test that might identify people in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease more than 10 years before they get symptoms.
Wow.
So this is so there was a study. There was a team, and it included researchers from Washington University's School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri, and the German Center for Neurodegenerative Disorders in Tübingen, Germany. So what the test is, it's looking for levels, changes in levels of the neurofilament light chain protein. I just got this information today, so I haven't like looked at Quest Diagnostics, where I usually order my labs from, to see if it's available there. But that's what they're looking for. There's another blood test, and that's the ApoE gene. If you have a bad ApoG version of the ApoE gene, like you're not ApoE3 or ApoE2 and 3, that you're ApoE1, then you're more likely, then you have more of a higher risk of getting Alzheimer's. But this is not testing a gene. This is testing this neurofilament light chain protein. So the idea is that this protein normally resides inside your brain cells, your neurons, as part of their internal structure. So when the cells are damaged and dying, they can leak these neurofilament light chains into the surrounding cerebrospinal fluid, and the protein travels from the fluid into your blood. So you can do a simple blood test and find these neurofilament light chains. And so if somebody already has those, there are some things you can do that can help to offset possible Alzheimer's. And of course, there's all kinds of studies that are going on to help with conventional methods of helping Alzheimer's disease. But, you know, we have natural medicine stuff that can be helpful as well. They said that this method could also test for other conditions that involve brain damage, like a traumatic brain injury, multiple sclerosis, and also strokes. So what I'm not clear about is if this NFL protein, by the way, how funny is this? The Super Bowl is in a couple of weeks, and and the initials of this protein are NFL. Ha ha ha! Neurofilament light chain. I know, right? Is that like so silly? But indeed, it's NFL. And Maria Shriver didn't say that. I did. Ha. So the thing is that because Alzheimer's disease is a major cause of dementia. And it destroys brain cells and tissues. And so it leads to symptoms like confusion, memory loss, and diminishing capacity to function. And the person can't live an independent life anymore. And there's about 5.5 million people with Alzheimer's in the United States today. That's a lot of people, 5.5 million. And there are three typical hallmarks in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. So what they do is, you know, they do autopsies, and then they look at the insides of the brain, and they look at the neurological composition of the brain. So what they see are beta amyloid protein, neurotip fibrillary tangles that contain tau protein, tau being T-A-U, the Greek letter tau, and a loss of connections between brain cells. And so it mostly strikes people who are 65 years and older, but there are rare forms that can strike earlier, and it's not fully understood. And about 1 in 20 people will have an early onset form that begins to show symptoms when you're younger than 65. And if you have that, it's usually inherited. It's usually genetic. There's a rare form that... is dominantly inherited, that is autosomal dominant. That means if you have just one gene, you're going to have Alzheimer's disease. If you have two genes, you'll have it worse. You'll have just a worse manifestation. And so there are certain genes that this DIAD, dominantly inherited Alzheimer's, comes from. So people who study this, they can study these people because when they can study people before a lot of their symptoms emerge, if they find that the people have the gene for it. And so when they gave the sample, they saw that there are that the NFL proteins are present 16 years ahead of symptomatology. So that's really interesting. So people with higher NFL usually had the gene mutation, and repeated visits showed the NFL proteins levels rising over time. And the people without the genetic mutation didn't show this panel. Their levels were present, but they remained steady over time. So if you have the genetic mutation, you're going to have this NFL protein. You're going to have worse progression of disease, unfortunately, because the protein advances and advances faster. Whereas if you have non-genetic Alzheimer's, you're going to see this degeneration, but the levels are going to stay similar. And so some people, they saw them 16 years before the onset of symptoms. It's really interesting. So you can try. So this is when you try to offset it by doing some helpful therapies. There are other conditions that can cause neurons to leak NFL. So people with Huntington's disease is a neurological condition where people have they have unrestricted movements. They have what we call chorea, not like the country. Chorea comes from the same root as choreography, dance. So people have involuntary dancing-like movements. And do you remember who the famous person who had Huntington's is?
No.
Woody Guthrie.
Oh, Woody
Guthrie. Yeah, he had Huntington's. And So Arlo is concerned. I don't think Arlo has it, but he was, of course, concerned about it because it's autosomal dominant, meaning if you have one copy of the gene, you're going to have it somewhat, and if you have two copies of the gene, you're going to have it worse. Was things that are recessive, if you have one copy of the gene, you don't manifest. And if you have two copies, you only manifest if you have two copies of the gene. Whereas dominant is not good. If you have one copy, you're going to manifest it somewhat.
So it's basically genetic in background then. You either have this or you don't, right?
What, Huntington's chorea?
Well, any of this stuff, even predisposed to Alzheimer's?
Uh-uh. No, you can have, there's genetically, what they're saying is that there's genetically based Alzheimer's, that there are certain genes, they even listed off certain genes, that if you have a mutation in these certain genes, then you're more likely to have Alzheimer's disease. And so there are people who have elevated NFL who don't have the genes. So you can have non-genetic, or it's either non-genetic or it's not the genes that they have looked at. So the genetically based Alzheimer's disease, they have earlier onset and worse progression and higher levels and increasing levels of degeneration, and therefore levels of this NFL protein over time. Yeah. So it's interesting. And so I'm just wondering if you were to do some therapies to preserve brain tissue, would you see a lowering of that NFL protein? That would be something that would be neat to monitor. Like I said, what I'm not sure of is, like, I just got this information today, so I haven't had a chance to see if I can order this blood test for somebody, how widespread it is, or if insurance covers it, or what the deal is with it. It's very interesting. So say you're concerned about Alzheimer's disease, say that somebody in your family had Alzheimer's disease, and you want to do something about it and you want to be proactive about it. Are there things you can do? So there are some studies on some natural therapies that may be helpful. If you use coconut oil, if you consume coconut oil, coconut oil has a fatty acid in it called caprylic acid. It has a number of fatty acids, but caprylic acid is one of them. And the body breaks down caprylic acid into ketones. There's a drug that's similar to ketones called ketacin. And there was research on this drug called ketacin, that show that people had better memory performance and less cognitive decline. And so some people are using coconut oil to help to produce more ketones so that they can have more memory performance. Of course, this brings up the idea. There are numerous neurological conditions. The first one I heard about was seizure disorder, where people use the ketogenic diet. So if somebody who has Alzheimer's or a chance of having Alzheimer's does a ketogenic diet, they may have less memory decline. And this is really interesting, because this is saying that people who ate coconut oil made more ketones because they had more caprylic acid around. And the ketones actually helped with cognitive function. That's very interesting. So I wonder, first of all, if you were to consume more MCT oil, medium chain triglyceride oil, could you make caprylic acid, which probably has some caprylic acid in that, would you have better cognitive function? If you ate coconut oil, would that be helpful? And if you were just on a ketogenic diet, do people with ketogenic diets generally have better brain function? Do they improve their brain function? So if you're a keto person and you're listening, please tell me about your brain function pre-keto and post-keto. I'd love to hear that. That would be a great thing to answer. If you want to call in, Ron will take your call. It's 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. This is suggesting that people on a ketogenic diet who consumed coconut oil, and because of the caprylic acid in the coconut oil, they produced more ketones, and the ketones improved their cognitive function. So it seems like coconut oil is your friend. Right?
Yeah.
Coconut oil is something to eat. We eat coconut oil.
Well, it's very friendly in our house.
Yes. But what did we have, you know, that stuff you made the other night with the chicken? Did it have coconut oil in it?
Yeah, always.
You sauteed the vegetables in the coconut oil.
I cook a lot with coconut oil.
Yeah.
Pretty much a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of coconut oil. Right. Sometimes I'll mix them.
Yeah.
But there's almost always coconut
oil. We should make
oil.
Sure we use coconut oil, because I don't always eat it in a spoon. I should just eat some. I should just spread it on stuff and eat it. Because coconut oil, not everybody likes the taste of virgin coconut oil, because it has that coconutty taste. Not everybody's into that. And so I had somebody say to me, can I use refined coconut oil? It doesn't smell or taste like coconut oil. What do you think the answer to that is?
Eat more coconut oil?
Somebody asked, because your virgin coconut oil is going to be less processed and it's going to have all the components that you're looking for.
Right.
There's an entity you can purchase called refined coconut oil. It's been bleached and deodorized, and
ew,
it doesn't taste like coconut.
Ew.
And because some people don't like that coconutty taste. I happen to love it, but not everybody does.
Well, some people don't like the taste of fish oil either.
No,
which is another one. And some people have a reaction to it.
Yeah.
Which
is
another issue.
Unpleasant. But, yeah. Which is what we're going to talk about next. But anyway, if you find refined coconut oil in the store, my advice to you is, if you're looking to improve your health and get caprylic acid and get medium chain triglycerides, don't do it. Don't go there.
It's the magic word, refined.
I know.
Refined. How about refined sugar? Would you like some refined sugar?
No, that's not good for you. That's not going to be good for your Alzheimer's either.
No.
No. That's not going to work.
The magic word is refined. Stay away.
No, not a good thing. No, if you're going to take virgin coconut oil, you want to be virgin, which means that it's minimally processed. You're going to get your caprylic acid. You're going to get your medium chain triglycerides. You're going to get your improved cognitive function. By the way, you're also going to get your improved thyroid function. Coconut oil is good for you. Yes. And I should be snacking on it. And if you don't like that coconutty taste, one thing to consider, if you want to try to eat it, even though you don't care for the coconutty taste, is to get nice virgin coconut oil. Think about flavors that you do like. Do you like sweet? Do you like cinnamon? Do you like fruity? Do you like savory? Do you want to put some Himalayan salt in it? Do you want to put some oregano and garlic? So anyway, season the coconut oil and see if you can tolerate it better. If you put a flavor into it, that is interesting. And like Ron said, you could mix it with olive oil. I'm a big fan of the black cumin seed oil. I think black seed oil is a miracle oil. So that would be another thing. Not everybody likes the taste of the black cumin seed oil because it is rather peppery. Where my sister's sensitive to heavy fats, and she has trouble taking fish oil because, you know, it's a little bit fishy, and it's a little bit heavy, even if you can't taste the fish because it's a high quality fish oil, it's a little bit heavy. I gave her black seed oil to try, and she liked it, you know, because in their house, of course, you know, they cook African, and people from Africa, from West Africa, they like those interesting peppery, spicy flavors. So she was just fine with the black cumin seed oil. What?
So I found a little listing here by The Coconut Mama.
Yes.
Which is coconutmama.com. Mm-hmm. And 12 ways to eat more coconut oil.
Oh.
Okay. And on her list is, of course, cooking with coconut oil.
Right.
Taking it by the spoonful, if you don't mind the flavor.
Right.
Add it to your smoothies.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
You can I put MCT oil in my shake.
Right.
I thought, because MCT oil, I don't mind taking the spoonful, but why not put it into my smoothie and give it a more, you know, nice creamy fatty feel?
And then you can add it to your coffee or tea.
Yes, of course.
Which we do the coffee thing.
Right.
You know?
Which is kind of like adding, because you like fatty stuff in your coffee. It makes it nice and it brings out the flavor more. MCT, if you use straight up MCT oil is more texture than taste. That tastes like the flavor of MCT oil is like water.
Right.
It really has no flavor, just oil.
Well, I made a cup of coffee one day and just put the MCT oil in.
Yeah.
And that was it. Yeah. And then I blended it and put it with the blender and it changed, like, the whole texture of the coffee changed.
So it was nice.
But it was really good. It was actually good, just like that.
Well, do you know why it would have been a nice experience for you? There's a very simple reason for that. You really like the taste of coffee, right?
I do.
Right. And so there's a lot of oils in coffee. So if you add more fat to your coffee, you're going to be carrying those aromatic oils on fat, and that fat is going to be, it's going to present those flavors more readily to your taste buds. So fat enhances the flavor of foods, makes things taste better because it captures fat-soluble flavors, which then interact well with your taste buds. So the coffee, even though the MCT oil has no taste, if you have a flavorful coffee and you like all the notes in the coffee, you're going to be able to taste them better. And then you probably put a little sugar in your coffee, too.
A little bit.
Yeah, and that.
A little bit. Not much, but a little bit. Yeah.
I find that if I'm drinking coffee and I don't want to put as much sugar in, I happen to like the taste of cinnamon. And when I put cinnamon in, I don't need to put as much sweet in it. And I don't have to put stevia in it. I don't have to put any. Like, I can put a little bit, you know, like I can cut my sugar by a lot. And, of course, cinnamon is really good for your blood sugar. It's good for your health in a lot of ways. All right. How else can you eat coconut oil?
Make coconut oil chocolate.
Sure.
Yeah. So bake with coconut oil.
Yeah.
Okay. Very simple. There's just a few more here. Add to your oatmeal.
Right.
You can add it in there while it's warm. It'll
your
melt.
Oatmeal
It'll
or
melt right in.
I had some, like my leftover quinoa. I ate it the other day. I happened to put grass-fed butter into it, but I could have put coconut. Sometimes
you
I do that.
Could
have
used coconut oil. See that? You can mix it into your yogurt.
Yeah.
You can add it to your nut butter.
Yes. Right.
And you can also fry it up with coconut oil if you want to do anything fried using coconut oil instead.
Yeah.
And coconut oil soft gels for those who struggle taking coconut oil or adding it to your diet.
You can get pills.
Oil capsules
it
are
seems
available.
Sad, but
it
yes, you can
sad.
Take pills.
And then eat coconut.
Yes.
Hey, there's an idea.
Yeah.
And coconut products.
Right.
And you can get your coconut oil that way. So
not as much fun to do up here as it is to do in, say, Florida or Hawaii
or
Cuba
or
somewhere tropical.
Cuba or someplace out there.
Where it
Puerto
grows.
Rico.
Where you can pick it off the tree and eat it.
Yep.
Never done that in Florida. I don't know why. Maybe I'm not where the coconuts grow.
I think you got to go further south.
Maybe it's not because where I am in Florida, it's not tropical. It's subtropical.
Right.
I mean, you can grow oranges and you can grow citrus there.
Further south, I think if you get down to Key West, you're going to find.
Oh yeah, coconuts. Maybe coconut trees.
Right, because that's really tropical when you get to Key West. So that's a different environment.
A
stone's throw across the puddle, and you're in
Cuba.
You know, Cuba and Puerto Rico and all those
and
islands.
And they have
down
the coconuts there.
And there's coconuts there for sure.
That's great.
Have you ever seen someone climb a tree and cut down coconuts?
No,
it's impressive.
I have not.
It's impressive.
Hopefully, we'll go there. Yeah, when you hit it big, we'll go on a vacation and we'll do that.
We'll go on a coconut vacation.
All right.
Mm.
So what else can you do to improve your cognition and help to offset Alzheimer's, whether you actually have it or you find out that you have increase in those NFL proteins? So we said consuming coconut oil, consuming omega-3 fatty acids. So that's eating fish and taking fish oil. May be beneficial. There was a study where researchers found that regular consumption of omega-3 fatty acids reduced cognitive impairment, although that was an animal study. However, it can relate, and you know, we always talk about how fish oil, fish is brain food, because our brains are very largely DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, which is one of the omega-3 fatty acids in fish and in fish oil. And then if you take fish oil, it has readily bioavailable EPA and DHA, eicosapentaenoic acid, as well as docosahexaenoic acid. And those omega-3 fatty acids are really great for both the structure of your brain tissue with the DHA, and the EPA is really great for lowering inflammation. And neuroinflammation is going to hasten any kind of neurodegeneration, including Alzheimer's. So omega-3 fatty acids are a really good idea. Coenzyme Q10, it's a great antioxidant. It's important to your body function as a whole, and being studied is helpful for Alzheimer's. Well, so the thing with coenzyme Q10 is it's very, very important. It's part of the electron transport chain. You have, so in your, in all of your mitochondria, which are the energy centers of all of the cells in your body, you have this entity called the electron transport chain, and it moves electrons along molecules. It's basically like the spark plugs of all of the cells of your body, and it can't function without CoQ10. Whereas if you have a surplus of CoQ10, all of your cells are going to function better, including your brain cells. So you're going to have better cognition if you have more CoQ10 on board. The other big place, so organs that use a lot of energy really rely on CoQ10. And your brain, of course, is always active, so it needs CoQ10. The other place that you use a lot of CoQ10 is your heart. If you're low in CoQ10, everything can go wrong with your heart, because CoQ10 is a treatment for any heart condition. It's a treatment for cardiomyopathy. It's a treatment for congestive heart failure. It's a treatment for high blood pressure. Also, the other thing you should remember is that if you take statin drugs, but any statin, anything that ends in statin, we're talking atorvastatin, your Lipitor, your simvastatin, pravastatin, rosuvastatin. Rosuvastatin is Crestor, simvastatin is Zocor, and atorvastatin is Lipitor. Any drug that ends in statin, red yeast rice, by the way, has lovastatin in it. You have to take CoQ10. They all deplete CoQ10. So it's kind of crazy that they give people these drugs that deplete CoQ10. They're trying to protect people to have good cardiovascular health. And the drug actually depletes something that's necessary, not only to your cardiovascular health, but to the function of all the cells in your body. Meanwhile, for your cognition, of course, if you're depleted in CoQ10, your cognition is going to be better if you have it on board, because all the cells in your brain are going to work better. They're going to all be sparking the way that they're supposed to. So, yeah. Coral calcium. This is interesting. So some people advocate it as a treatment. Coral calcium, it has trace minerals in it. And there are those who say because it has the trace minerals, makes it more beneficial. It hasn't been, but coral calcium has been promoted as a treatment for Alzheimer's disease. But there's question about whether that particular calcium is going to be helpful. If you're depleted in calcium, it might be helpful. But I'm not a big proponent of coral calcium. I am a proponent of get a lot of trace minerals, because trace minerals in general are good for you. But coral calcium, I don't know. So acupuncture. Now you're going to get me dancing on the table around acupuncture, because I got my good acupuncturist, and
you're a big fan
of acupuncture. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And I was a big fan when I found out what it was back at NCNM, and you know, I took, they gave everyone an introduction to acupuncture. And then if you wanted to continue on and get your license, at that time you had to go to the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. And now I think they make it easier to get your acupuncture licensing while you're in naturopathic college, because it's considered to be a naturopathic modality. But I didn't get my training in it, and I think I've thought that, like, if I had the money, would I go back to school to become a licensed acupuncturist? And I don't know, if I had that much money, I probably would be, you know, just backing off on doing. I would change up my life and do things a little bit differently, not get another trade where I then would have to work doing client care. Meanwhile, we have lovely acupuncturists in the area. We have a number of some big shout out to Traver Garrity, to Emily Holman, to Nicole Smith, to Shannon Kuzel. Let me see, Megan Marco out in Glastonbury. Deborah Dyers, who's also in Glastonbury. And if I'm missing you, Edwin Brown, who's in Manchester. And then all the local naturopaths who also do acupuncture. So big shout out. And by the way, Alex Celestri, who is a chiropractor in Mansfield, also does acupuncture. And if I didn't mention your name, it's just because it didn't come to my mind off the top of my head. So, you know, shout out to me and I will shout you out. Okay.
And it used to be that we only had one or two people that were doing it. And now there's a lot more because it's starting to gain interest.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's
the
really
pain
good
management
for you.
Is like incredible with it.
It's good for everything. People, I don't know if people realize that. Yes, it is good for pain management, but it's not just good for it's like naturopathic medicine. It's a whole body therapy. When you do traditional Chinese medicine, you're tonifying all of the meridians associated with all of the organs in your body. When I go see Nicole, I'm like, "Nicole, I'm stressed out." And she says, "Okay." And she gives me points for stress. She asked me last time, "Do you have any issues with your sinuses?" I said, "Yeah, do a couple sinus points." So she did. I have this chronic knee thing going on. She always does my knee, which is great. I have a chronic toe thing. She does my toe. So she does pain stuff. But what I try to encourage people to do is when you're going to visit your acupuncturist, tell them everything that's going on because there are points for everything. One time I went in and I made the mistake of having caffeine before my visit. And I said to Nicole, she checks on you like halfway. You're lying on the table with your needles in. She checks on you about halfway through. She said, "How you doing, Fran?" And I said, "You know what? I'm having trouble relaxing because I made the mistake of having some caffeine earlier in the day." She said, "Oh, I don't know if there's anything I can do about that. Maybe I should do some heart points." So she did. She did some heart points. And guess what? It worked. She was able to calm my heart down from the caffeine by doing some heart points.
Really?
So if you're anxious or you have palpitations or you have something going on with your heart, you have blood pressure issues, you can get acupuncture. So you can get acupuncture for whole body tonifying, including help for cognitive issues and Alzheimer's.
I should go see her.
You should go see her. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then aromatherapy is good for a lot of stuff too. And, you know, we've had Sue Cody on with her, you know, high level knowledge of aromatherapy and her good quality essential oils. There was a short term study that on a group of older adults, some of whom had Alzheimer's disease. And at the end of the study, every person had improvement in their thinking abilities. So and they used very simple like the herbs they used were really stuff you have around the, you know, just easy stuff. They used rosemary oil, lemon, lavender, and orange. So what I'm wondering is if you just have those things around, if you just have rosemary around and you smell it, or if you just, you know, have lemon in your water and you inhale it. Now, of course, essential oils are going to be much more concentrated. But if you have those things around, are they going to be helpful for you? I have to tell you, I use a lovely hand sanitizer when I'm in the office. And, you know, it's a brand that has essential oils in it. So the one I choose to use is the lavender. It comes in lemon, too, but I think lemon is too – I love the smell of lemon myself, but I feel like the smell of lemon is too energizing. So I use lavender, and lavender is calming in general. So people come into my office, they are going to feel calmed by the lavender. So many people come into my office and say, "It always smells so good in here." And they don't just say, "Oh, it smells nice in here." They're like, "It smells so good in here." And when they say it like that, that means the lavender is having an effect on them. So when they say that, I encourage them to make friends with the lavender, and they should have more lavender in their life, not just in my office. Mm-hmm. So the essential oils can help with your cognitive ability. How cool is that? They did bright light therapy with people with Alzheimer's, and because Alzheimer's affects the part of the brain that affects circadian rhythm. One of the things you'll see where you have, when you have 24-hour memory care centers, they will honor the fact that people with Alzheimer's have a messed up circadian cycle. So often people with Alzheimer's will be active at night and go to sleep during the day.
Mm.
So they'll have a reversed circadian cycle. So if you can do bright light therapy to help to rebalance that. Or if you can't rebalance it, then there are memory care places. They're just like, all right, so we're going to have activities all through the night and let them do their thing and let them sleep during the day. We'll just let them do what they do. And, you know, so those places are very helpful because, you know, they're just honoring where the person is at. However, when you do the light therapy, you give them bright full spectrum light first thing in the morning, and it helps to increase daytime wakefulness and reduce evening agitation. Because one of the things that happens with people with Alzheimer's is they have sundowning syndrome, where they become, when the sun goes down, they become excitable, nervous, anxious, even agitated, or just active. And like I said, some places they just take care of that by allowing them to have activities during the when they're active and let them sleep during the day. So herbs, there's large studies on ginkgo. There was a study that found that, you know, we always think of ginkgo as being helpful for cognitive health, and I have seen that before. And there are a few small studies that show that ginkgo can help benefit people with cognitive impairment. One of the things I like to tell people is when you're doing ginkgo, this is a situation where you want to make sure that the ginkgo is phosphatidylcholine bound, that you want it to be in phytosome form. When it's in phytosome form, the cells are going to be more interested in grabbing onto that ginkgo molecule and bringing it into the brain. So ginkgo phytosome is the way to go because you want to get into the fatty tissue of the brain. And so when I'm helping people who have, you know, major concerns about their cognition, ginkgo phytosome is something I like to use. And so when you use anti-inflammatory herbs, that can be helpful too. There are studies with on exercise and Alzheimer's where they say that if you exercise, you're less likely to develop it. That was one of the things Maria Shriver's talked about. And if you go to Mayo Clinic, you can say that possibly exercise has a lot of known benefits. Reducing your risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, strengthening your bones and muscles, and reducing stress. And when you exercise several times a week for 30 to 60 minutes, it does help your brain function. It really helps your brain function stay sharp. And there are studies where they show that exercise improves memory, reasoning, and judgment for people with mild Alzheimer's or other kinds of cognitive impairment, and also can delay the start of Alzheimer's. So, you know, how do you prevent Alzheimer's? Get on your bike and ride, or do other stuff too. It helps your brain in many ways. You increase chemicals that protect your brain, and it counters a lot of the things that happen in terms of the natural aging process. So that's why, you know, people who exercise a lot often seem younger, unless they're pushing themselves too hard. You know, if you can overdo it, and then do you feel like, you know, people who exercise excessively and they seem aged by it?
Yes.
Yeah. So there is
absolutely.
There is, yeah, a place where there's a
line. Yeah. There's a crossing line there. Yeah.
Right.
And the magic word is balance.
Yeah.
It's balance. That's what it is.
Yes.
So yeah, I would definitely say, especially if they are an outdoor exerciser.
Yeah.
So they spend a lot of time out in the hot sun and, you know, a lot of environmental impact on them that way. I would say that would age you a little
the
bit.
The other thing that ages you is long cardio.
Cardio is another
when
one.
When you're doing long cardio, like, yep, if your thing is, if you're a marathon runner, if you're a triathlete,
it wears on you. Yes. So doing the shorter triathlons would be satisfying to that habit. But
well,
it's
once
not,
again, if you look at you it, know, if again, you think about yeah. think about what does a marathon runner look like versus what does a sprinter look like? The sprinters look fit and healthy and younger than their years, and the marathon runners look sort of gaunt and it's like you said. Well,
beaten up.
And what it's the problem there is because of the long cardio. It's because of spending all that time in cortisol. That's why if you spend a lot of time in high cortisol, then it's going to break down your body. That's cortisol's job. Cortisol is there to, it does your fight or flight and it makes it so you can exercise. But if you spend a lot of your time in a cortisol bath, it's going to break your body down. That's just how it goes. Whereas if you work hard and then rest and work hard and then rest, it's very different because when you do high intensity intervals, you build muscle tissue and you build growth hormone. So you build things that, you literally build things that make you, that slow down your aging and cause you to regenerate better. So doing resistance training is key. And if you're doing lots of long cardio, you're shortchanging yourself and you're aging yourself faster. It's a really good idea to keep doing that resistance training. And to do short intervals and to limit your long, so if you were into, you know, doing those sentry rides, I didn't do any sentry rides last year, not one.
But you did some high 80s, low 90s.
I did. But,
it's just a number.
I'm backing off on the super long rides.
Just a number.
And the long rides I'm doing no more than once a week now. Mm-hmm. I used to do, a lot more. But I'm backing off on that because you get tired. And you want to enjoy your life.
You do, and it's just a number.
Yeah.
And if it's a number, if that's what makes you happy to see the numbers, then I guess you should do it.
Yeah.
But, I've been talking about this for years now. Time in the saddle.
Yeah.
It's about time. It's not about miles.
Take
the miles equation out. Just
well, and quality time.
Right.
It's also quality
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And there's two different types of time. There's quality time, and then there's I just want to go out and ride my bike and have some fun time.
Yes, of
and
course.
And I'm a big proponent of that one. I think that's a good thing. If your goal is, of course, speed and performance, then you're going to have to put some serious quality time in there.
And that kind of quality time, though, a lot of that is you're not going to be working out for very long. You're mm-hmm. going to be working out for an hour or less. And you're going to be doing intervals.
You know what's really, really important about that quality time?
What?
Rest.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, that's why, but the fact that you rest makes it so that you can push yourself really hard. And the pushing yourself really hard for short intervals actually makes you make stuff so that you don't age as fast.
Mm-hmm.
So when you rest, then you have time to rebuild and regenerate. And so when we say rest, we're talking about the rest intervals in between the actual intervals you're doing. And then the rest days where you're going easy or you're taking off or you're sleeping, all
right.
of that. So anyway, we got here because Alzheimer's can protect you against, because exercise can protect you from the degeneration
of
Alzheimer's.
List.
Yes,
yeah,
for
one
sure.
Of the things on the list. Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else that I didn't mention that you're seeing on your list there?
No, I think you pretty much covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the latest on cholesterol, but I don't know if I want to do that today. So I'm going to talk about why shea butter is good for you. Some cool things that you can do to, by the way, the other thing is, we should talk about like what's going on right now. We're definitely in the thick of cold and flu season. I'm once again seeing people coming in who, I got this cold. When did you get it? A month ago. Really?
Right. Yeah.
Oh. Yep. And so they have sinuses that are mucked up. They have bronchitis that's just not going away. And it's not going away. Are you one of them?
From one of those who has experienced this, this is a one that likes to hang on,
right?
Especially if you have any sinus issues.
Yeah.
Anyway, it really likes to hang on. So you have to be really diligent about using your neti pot and
nasal sprays
and all that fun stuff. And you gave me that stuff. That mucus stuff.
Yes. So that's the thing. So the thing is, if you have a cold or bronchitis that's hanging on, this is a really good time to see your friendly local natural practitioner, whether it's a naturopathic physician or somebody else. Natural medicine is really what's going to help you here. I mean, you could go and get antibiotics if you want to, but if you, as you know, if you take antibiotics, you take it too much, you're looking at a possibility of getting antibiotic resistant bacteria in your body. And the things that you take in terms of natural medicine are going to be less likely to cause antibiotic resistance. So what I like to do when somebody comes in, I've been sick with this for a month, I give them a mixed, I have a number of mixed supplements that have vitamins in them. They'll have high doses of vitamin A, C, E, and zinc. And then they'll have nice combinations of grapefruit seed extract, ginger, cayenne, garlic, echinacea, maybe Oregon grapefruit, maybe golden seal, a whole bunch of antimicrobial herbs. And so when you put that in, so what is going on when you have that ongoing congestion? There could be a few things going on. It could be that your immune system has been taken down, and so you're just not able to. The viral infection is probably gone, but you may have a superimposed bacterial infection. You may have some mold going on. You may just have some chronic inflammation that's just not settling down. And it also may be that you're allergic to something, and because your immune system is down, the thing you're allergic to is continuing to irritate you. I think in your case, Ron, you have chronic sinusitis, and you probably have scarring in your sinuses, so it makes them more difficult to clear out. Like I don't suffer with the chronic sinusitis like you do, and I know I have very patent sinuses.
My whole family suffers.
Exactly.
From that.
Exactly. So you have a lot of scarring. Then one of the things you have to look at is, are you, now you probably don't have your cold, your virus anymore.
No.
You probably had the virus, you made a whole bunch of mucus and inflammation, you got some more inflammation and scarring, and it never quite went down because you're perpetuating it somehow. And you may be perpetuating it because you have allergies anyway. There could be mold living in there that's real happy, and it, because it had a nice feed of mucus, it's able to stay there, and it, so it's continuing to live. You may have some superimposed bacteria. If you had a lot of bacteria, I think you'd be sicker. But this may be, you may have some actual mold growing in your nose that's just irritating you. And because you have the scarring, it's not able to come out, but the inflammation isn't going down. So that one of the things you have to look at there is, are there other ways to reduce your inflammation?
That's a disturbing visual.
All right.
That there's mold in my nose.
There's mold in everybody's nose.
I know, but
get over it.
I think about, you know, the stuff that grows on the side of the house.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what? No. If we cultured your nose for mold, unfortunately, we wouldn't find one species. We'd probably find, I don't even know, 20, 100, I'm not sure.
I have a training ground for mold.
Oh, yeah. We all have mold in our nose. That's one of the reasons that we get stuffy. And the thing with, why do we have mold in our nose? Because it's a warm, moist environment, and it's easy for it to grow there. So, you know, there's always a little bit going on, and some people are bothered by it more than others. And our house, you know, we have only so much we can do to keep it clean. It's got some dampness problems, so we're perpetuating it that way. You may have, unfortunately, a dairy protein allergy that you and I are in denial about, because
we haven't explored that yet.
That's
well,
right.
I did explore it for a short period of time before I explored the gluten thing.
Yes,
and you know, I don't know that it really,
well, right.
I,
well,
I don't,
it doesn't,
know that it made a huge
dairy
difference,
doesn't not, particularly but affect your digestion, but mm-hmm. it may be affecting your nose.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if I was any clearer in my head when I was doing that.
That was 13, 14 years ago. Who knows?
I understand, but I after I went gluten free, I remained dairy free for about 6 months.
Yeah, right.
I can't recall whether there was a big difference.
It was
or not.
14 years ago. We don't know.
That's true. I can't remember 14 days ago.
Well, and the thing is, you're that much older.
Yeah.
You know, you were 50 years old, and now you're 64.
Hey.
Almost
64.
Don't
jump the gun here.
Yes,
huh?
Right. And
back off.
And your body's different. And, you know, you're the other thing is, you're a little run down because you're so stressed. So that's the other thing that's going on with people. If people are not, if you're not able to rest, you're not going to be able to kick whatever you've got because your immune system can't get rid of everything that's going on. So what you're looking at is a symptom threshold. You have to get yourself below the symptom threshold. So if you've got mold that's eating at your immune system all the time, you're going to get a nonspecific immune reaction that's going to perpetuate your inflammation. And if you've got scarring in your sinuses, it's going to be, you've got a perfect storm there. So what do you do about that? Well, of course, you know, one of the things that Ron is doing is he's using nasal sprays and neti pots, and his nasal spray has xylitol and grapefruit seed extract and salt and cayenne in it. He's using that as well as just a neti pot with salt. Do you put tea tree oil in your neti pot?
Yep.
Okay. And just neti with salt and tea tree oil. So he's doing that. And it's still not cutting it. So,
not yet. No. I mean,
okay.
It's better. It's a lot better than it was.
Right.
And I think that mucus breakdown stuff that you gave me,
that's helpful too.
I think that was probably the most helpful.
So let's talk about mucus breakdown stuff. What did I give him? What I gave him was guaifenesin. So there's a natural product that you can get that has guaifenesin in it. And what's nice about it has no colors. It doesn't have the added, like if you get Mucinex, Mucinex is guaifenesin. That's what it is. So
right.
If you get plain Mucinex, you can use that. Plain Mucinex that's what it is. It's guaifenesin. Of course, it's going to have coloring and titanium dioxide and stuff like that in the pill. But it does work. And guaifenesin is an extract of guaiacum bark. And by the way, guaiac is what's on, you know, when you get tested for occult blood in your stool and they put a little bit of stool on a card and then they put a developer on her.
Well, I don't know that, but you do.
The developer has guaiac in it, and when it turns blue, then you know that there's blood. In your guaiac reacts with blood, and it will turn it blue, so that you know that there's blood in your stool. But anyway, guaifenesin is an extract of guaiacum bark, and it's a mucolytic. It thins mucus. And it can be really effective. I find that if I have, you know, bronchitis or if I have sinusitis and I don't need much. I can get away with maybe 400 to 800 milligrams of guaifenesin in a day. And the pills that I have, they're 200 milligrams per pill, which is very nice because you can take the lowest dose possible. So some people are only going to need 400 milligrams in a day. I think the lowest dose you can get of Mucinex is 600 milligrams, and you usually can't take any more than four of those a day. Once you get above 2,400 milligrams, you get nauseous. But I find I don't generally need that much, that I take 800 milligrams in a day, and that's enough for me. It definitely thins my mucus and makes it easier to come out. And that will work wherever your mucus is. If you are having, you know, sticky sinusitis where the mucuses won't run out, if you're having it in your chest, it'll help you to bring it up. And if you're trying to get pregnant, it'll help there too. Mm. So if your cervical mucus is too sticky and it's not letting the sperm in, you can take guaifenesin and it will help to thin your mucus. There are other things that thin mucus. So bromelain is another one, pineapple enzyme. That's another thing that thins mucus. The cool thing about bromelain is it's antibacterial too. So bromelain is a nice thing to take when you're getting in one of these sticky patches where you've had an infection for a long time. You can drink pineapple juice. You're not going to get as much bromelain, unfortunately, from pineapple juice as you will from taking a pill because most of the bromelain is in the stem. That's where the bromelain is. That's like with olive leaf. Olive leaf is this really cool compound. Olive leaf is where the oleuropein and the hydroxytyrosol is, and it's mostly in the leaf. So if there's some in olive oil and olives, but there's way more in leaf. So if you want to have an antiviral effect from olive leaf, or antimicrobial effect, you kind of have to take the olive leaf extract. So if you've got this long-standing condition, mucolytics can be helpful. The other mucolytic that's really nice is N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine is another mucolytic, and it's got a number of benefits. One of them is thinning mucus. Another is it's a great antiviral, and it's a great detoxifier. So all of these things can thin mucus. There's also a really special, rare, and precious substance that thins mucus. It's very hard to find. unless you if you are not paying attention. Do you know what it's called?
Water.
You got it. That's right. So the best mucolytic, that one of the things you want to do if you have a lot of mucus is drink a lot of water. Water, because water will hydrate your mucus and make it thinner.
Right.
Yeah. Very simple. You're just diluting it.
Right.
That's all. So that's one of the things. So the other thing is, you know, if we are positing that one of the reasons that you have this ongoing infection is you've got mold in your nose. So how can you get rid of the mold in your nose? Well, again, you're going to use mechanical means. You're going to use your neti pot and your grapefruit seed extract and your salt and xylitol. And that's going to break down biofilm if you have any superimposed bacterial infection that will make it harder to live. If you can't get in there because everything's so inflamed, one of the things to remember, there's a couple things you can do. One is to do a steam inhalation where you boil a pot of water, take it off the heat, a couple drops of essential oil, volatile oil, like eucalyptus is a great one. You can do red cedar oil. You can do even lavender and lemon. Put essential oils in the pot. Oregano oil, that's a great one as well. And then put a towel over your head over the steaming pot. Make sure it's off the burner. You never put your face over a pot that's on a burner.
Especially if you have a towel over your head.
Right. You burn your face.
Well,
the steam will burn you.
You could also light the towel on fire.
Oh, there's that too.
It's just a minor problem.
Minor problem there.
We don't want to light anything
on fire. No, no more lighting on fire. That's
not
a bad
even
thing.
Coffee pots.
No, not, or yeah.
You're
not,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, so you do a steam inhalation.
That's a private joke.
So the other thing that you can do is just applications directly to your face. So you do get a hot washcloth. Washcloth that's wrung out in hot water, and you put it across your face, leave it there for 3 minutes, and then take a cold washcloth and leave it there for 30 seconds and alternate 3 times, and that'll get things moving.
I should do that.
Drinking hot tea and hot beverages, especially hot tea with some aromatic stuff. And you like to do your ginger. That's a really good one.
Yep.
I think Tulsi is a good idea. Tulsi is holy basil. That's a really good whole body tonic, and it's a mint because it's basil.
Right.
But it's a specific species of basil that, that's drunk in India. We think of it as one of the Indian ginsengs, but it's a whole body tonic, but it's got those aromatic aspects to it, so it can be really helpful. You can mix Tulsi and ginger
Anything
if you want
minty, to. Minty is good.
Minty is
I like
good.
Mint.
Unless you get a belly thing from mint, which I do a little bit.
Not me.
That's good. No. I mean, I don't mind mint. Like, I can do mint-flavored things, but, like, mint tea doesn't entirely agree with me because it relaxes my lower esophageal sphincter too much, and then I get a little burping from that, and it's unpleasant. But mint is relaxing to the digestive system, so once you get it past your lower esophageal sphincter, it'll relax everything else. So the other thing I like to do with people who have these long-standing conditions, getting acupuncture would be a very good idea. That's another thing to do. The other thing is rest. I had this experience where I had a bronchitis that was going on, and then I went to Florida and it was gone in a couple of days.
Mm.
And I don't know if that was because of the rest or the fact that I was eating oranges off my mother's orange tree.
Boy, those were good.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Well, the thing is, when you're eating an orange right off a tree, all of the bioflavonoids and the vitamin C are immediately bioavailable. So you get all that and then you get the reduction in inflammation. Boy, am I going to miss that.
Yeah, I know. It's too bad. She's selling the house with the tree.
Yeah.
You know, there are other houses with trees.
Yeah, that she's not going to live in one, though.
I know, but maybe we could, you know, like...
find one.
Go out for a walk and pound on somebody's door. We could also go to Nokomis.
Nokomis has a farmer's market, and we can go to Nokomis and get local oranges. It's all right.
Does our yoga friend have oranges in her yard?
No, she has limes. She has limes and papayas. I'm not sure what else. She has loads of bananas.
Really?
Yeah, bananas and papayas, and she has key limes.
That's funny.
So that's all right. So that'll be helpful. I'm not sure if she has oranges or lemons or, you know, or grapefruits.
You know, I had a friend who used to have a lemon tree inside their house.
Yeah, we could do
that
too.
Up here.
Yeah, we could do that.
They do grow if you take care of them.
Right.
But we would have to take care of it.
Yeah, that's right. So, like
just
our fig tree.
just
so that's a thought too. So mm-hmm. And the other thing is rest, of course. And you can also, if you have available to you, if you have a steam room you can go to, that's a great thing. If you can be in a hot tub, you can take hot baths, put pot essential oils in the hot baths. The other thing to do is to take a hot shower, get a spray bottle, and put some, volatile oil in it. And eucalyptus is a great one to do this with. I have a spray bottle in the shower that it's just a water bottle and has like 10 drops of eucalyptus oil in it. And I spray it in the shower and it's really uplifting. It's really nice. And so the steam will help you with that. You can also get tablets that you can drop at the bottom of your shower that fizz up and release eucalyptus oil.
For real?
Yeah. Yeah, we have some. Weird. I bought them last year when I was sick like a year ago. I bought some. I have some. So I've seen them. I actually saw them at the drugstore. And that's the other thing to know. If you're traveling and you don't have a health food store nearby, you can go to your friendly local drugstore, your friendly chain drugstore, and they're getting better about having natural medicine sections. And even if they're not the best brands, when we were away, I didn't have my natural medicine with me. And I got some, I got Zicam and I got Airborne, things that I wouldn't generally use because they have chemicals in them. But because that's what we had, that's what we used. And I didn't get sick. You got sick. You got over your illness faster, the acute cold. And I didn't, and my mother and I didn't get sick at all. So those things really can be helpful. So, all right. So that's some helpful stuff for you. The other thing that can perpetuate your illness is if you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables and if you are eating too much sugar. Because that's the other thing that happens this time of year, so much sugar around. Because if you have sugar left over from the holidays, we're almost a month out from the holidays and we still have a lot of our sugar left.
I know. And what's with the voices?
The voices calling you to eat the sugar?
Yeah, the sugar. There's little voices coming out of the sugary treats.
Yes.
And they're saying,
they
eat
call
me,
you.
Eat me.
Yeah, I know.
Right. I know. It's terrible.
I'm pretty good about
it. It's a bad habit.
Not eating too much of them at once. Mm. I'm going to go and come back next week. So if you have more questions for me, you can get a hold of me and I will answer your questions. But for now, I am going to sign off and be real appreciative of the fact that you continue to support and listen to Radio Naturopath. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath. This is a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.